Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's Monday, it's the wind-up, the latest video games, the biggest talking points, the juiciest leaks and rumors for the gaming week. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Oh my god, hello Scott Tilford, firing on all cylinders over here.
Sweet lord, I thought I'd sit down and write a little cheeky little intro, because I thought that for the wind-up we should just get the energy flowing, get the pistons firing, get all sorts of different things that we can talk about. And there is quite a lot going on in the gaming world, in terms of games to play anyway, in terms of things like Far Cry 6, in terms of things like Sable, in terms of really lovely games that might end up being Game of the Year, which isn't Far Cry 6, but also, in terms of big old talking points, a lot of stuff happened across the weekend at the DC Fandome, so we thought we'd just break those things down. There's a new Gotham Knights game, a new Gotham Knights story trailer, and there's a sort of story, but it's all of it's rendered in engine, so I was kind of going to call it, like, it's not gameplay, but it's like it's indicative of what they're going for in terms of the look for both Gotham Knights and the Suicide Squad Killer Justice League game, and we might talk a little bit about the Batman and the Flash movie trailers as well. But Gotham Knights, what do you think?
Honestly, man, when this was first announced last year or the year before, whenever it was, time's a flat circle, I thought it looked pretty promising here. So for me, the Gotham Knights one in particular was kind of just more of the same. I'm already into this game since we had the big gameplay reveal. I thought that genuinely looked quite good. I like the setup. I like that it's this kind of, you know, Arkham adjacent thing. It's obviously not in that universe, but it's still taking some cues from there.
Well,
he said it's not. I don't think it is. I don't think they would lie, because it would just set expectations up wrong.
Yes, they're definitely pulling from the Arkhamverse, like somewhat tonally, but then they also kind of, because like for me, I did a 180 on it because I thought when they first showed it off, it looked like this co-op only, like online platform type thing, and I could see the deluxe batarangs a mile off. And then, but now they're like, oh, here's the story trailer, and it's entirely the Court of Owls, which they have mentioned before, but now you actually get to see stuff from. Did you read the Court of Owls books?
No, but I've heard from you and that they're very good.
Yes, they are very, very good. That's like one of my like favorite like Batman arcs or whatever. And so in this trailer, they show things like what looks like the maze, which is like, I mean, the thing is with the Court of Owls, it's a very Batman, very Bruce Wayne centric story. But obviously with him being dead in the canon, or is he? Then they have to do it with someone else. But there is a whole part in that where, you know, Bruce sort of descends down, finds this sort of Illuminati style set of cave systems and mazes that lives underneath Gotham. And then there's a whole thing with like what he sees in there and its different reflections on himself and stuff like that. And so like that's a really cool thing to pull from. And that maze very much looks like it's in the trailer. There's a bit where Batwoman has one of the owl masks on.
Yes.
And it seems like that's going to be what they're going for. But the level of storytelling that's in here like is completely diametrically opposed with the idea of a loot-based or at least a co-op focused multiplayer game. So if there's a worthwhile story here, then I'm 100% back in.
Well, I was interested because initially, like you, I was turned off. I was thinking, I don't want a Batman, something set in the Batman universe to be this kind of co-op looter brawler thing. But when I saw that first gameplay trailer and from reading the interviews where they were saying, like, even if you do play a co-op, I'm pretty sure it's only two people at a time. So it's you and a partner. It's not like this, you know, four-player aliens fireteam
squad thing. Yeah.
Squad thing. Yeah. It seems like you can play alone. And it kind of, at least to me, I get more vibes of Assassin's Creed from it, you know, in the way that that's an open world game, and the loot system is obviously a huge part of the more recent Assassin's Creed games, and you're getting like, you know, your different tiered loot, you're constantly swapping things out. It looks to me to be more inspired by that, which obviously works very much as a single player game and occasionally a story driven game. So I'm hoping they get a similar balance, and I have no reason to believe they won't from what I've seen, especially now they're coming out with this story trailer that, like you said, puts so much more focus on the characters, the world, world and the actual driving force behind it.
The thing that is weird, though, like I said, for me, I know they've literally said it's not in the Arkhamverse, but they're almost picking and choosing bits and pieces from it. Like Bruce Wayne is dead, or at least thought to be dead, because they show his grave and stuff, which obviously was the end of Arkham Knight, or at least one of the endings in Arkham Knight, if you didn't get the true ending. But then, you know, stuff like the Penguin isn't from London anymore. He's from like New York. So they're sort of mm-hmm. changing that around. And then the costumes for each of the characters are almost Golden Age DC or Silver Age. Like they're proper old school. Batwoman's is like bright purple and yellow costume, but then she's walking through like a really like decrepit, like underground cave system. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I mean, and then they've got the bright neon sign for the logo itself. And I'm like, are you trying to thread that line of like, it's for the kids. It's really bright and popular. But it's also Arkham and it's also gritty. And it's like, yeah.
I think, I don't know, man. Again, I can only go from the trailers we've seen, but the visual aesthetic from the latest trailer I really liked, because it did take some of the grittiness of the Arkhamverse, like you said, and, you know, obviously that comes from the comics and, you know, the animated series and stuff as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have injected it with this color, but I don't think it's, you know, this kind of jarring color. For me, it's very much in terms of the version of Gotham that they've painted here, which is this gothic version of the city, but also it has this kind of like neon spark to it. It kind of has this kind of weird visual flair, this more colorful flair that to me works a lot, because I was a bit sick, even though I love the Arkham games, I was a bit sick of the visual style towards the end of it, because I thought they leaned too much into the sci-fi technological future aspect.
I love
of
that
it.
Stuff
Which that's quite funny. We need to talk about that more in depth at some point, because I don't really jive with that. And I also didn't like the kind of character models towards the end. You know, you had your big gruff dudes and everyone was this big gruff dude, and it was like very much exaggerated, and that's
like
cool.
Gears
but
of
I
War
kind of
style.
Thought, yeah, it was very much Gears of War-esque, and I kind of got sick of that towards the end. And I like that this has a bit more variety, it seems. Mm.
No, the thing with the tech side of it, I love the new Batsuit. The thing that I don't like is that Batman just has a vision mode for every last thing. Like it was like, oh, he goes to a crime scene, then there's like a specific chemical that spilled it, and he's like, well, give me a minute, I'll put that in the database, and then that's the thing that shows me exactly where that chemical's been or whatever. And I thought that he just started solving everything with an array of vision modes. So I agree with you on that side, that level of the technology stuff did like take away from being the world's greatest detective, because he was just the world's greatest vision filter user. But I think that you know, if they do something where it's on that level, if they rely on the detective work, it's cool. But I love that scene when you first get the advanced suit and all the pieces click into place. It's very Iron Man. It's full on Iron Man. But yes. I thought that was cool because I thought, him being you know, technologically powered anyway.
Totally. I liked the suit in that, don't get me wrong, but I thought Arkham Asylum, and I know a lot of people kind of like don't like the suit in that necessarily, but for me it kind of felt more like the Arkham Asylum comic by, I think it was Grant Morrison, where Batman is, you know, more of a specter. He's kind of like more of this strange ethereal being as much as he is a down-to-earth detective who uses all of this technology. And it's a hard balance to get right, and obviously you can veer too far in certain directions, but I thought that, you know, it's not even the point I was wanting to make initially, but I thought that in Arkham Knight, it got a bit too much tech-based, in the same way that if I have one gripe about Spider-Man, Insomniac Spider-Man, it's that Peter Parker there was also too much tech-based. Sometimes I just like them being more natural in their powers and more mythological in their appearances.
Yeah, man, there's a whole thing to be said. You want to talk about tangents? There's a whole thing to be said about how modern-age Spider-Man is kind of just Iron Man with a Spider-Man costume. Like, it's fine. I love Tom Holland and all that jazz, but even in the Insomniac one, he's very, like, which I get is something, again, like it was seeded in the comics, it is a thing from the comics, but I think to a mainstream audience like myself, or more mainstream than following the comics, it does seem like he's just the tech guy, and it's another tech guy, and it's like, well, we can't do an Iron Man game, so we'll just do all the tech stuff with Spidey, and it works well enough, but it does kind of stand out. But yeah, overall though, I mean, I guess we saw a little bit of gameplay maybe a year or two ago, like you said, Times of Flat Circle, but we did see a bit of Gotham Knights gameplay a little while ago, and then in this case, they lent entirely on the Court of Owls stuff, which is funny because you'll remember, like, sort of 2017, 2018, we started covering this back in the day. It was back when it was leaked to be called Batman Arkham Insurgency, and the vast majority of those plot points have actually carried over, including the gameplay details, not Joker's existence, because obviously maybe Joker is in here in some sort of imaginary form again. I guess he could be in, actually, if they're doing like a split timeline thing, because he would still maybe be around. But all the Batman and Arkham Insurgency stuff was the Batmobile, the Bat Bike would be in here, and it would be all about the Court of Owls, and it would be like the ramifications. Then you'd be going up against mini bosses against the Talons, which the Talons are like a sort of like a high ranking fighter inside the court itself. And in the trailer, the new trailer, they show like a guy with like a different style mask who's like their leader. So it's just, it's lots of things that are, that were from those leaks that were from the original Court of Owls comic. I do personally think that it's missing Batman massively. Like, as someone who has read that story, it is a Bruce story. I don't really know what you do unless maybe they do all the things and they bring like is Damian Wayne in this at all? I forget whether he's one of the family or not.
I'm not entirely sure if
he is. We've seen Batwoman, we've seen Robin, and then it's like, I don't know whether they're doing anything with Damian Wayne, but they could maybe do some sort of Court of Owls adjacent story by plastering it onto Damian and letting doing the sins of the father type stuff. But overall, I thought that was a pretty positive showing for it. I don't know how long, they said it's coming out in 2022. Are you kind of just all in, or are you waiting for gameplay stuff?
I would like to see more gameplay. It's the superhero game at the moment that's maybe exciting me the most from what we've seen. You know, I remember when it was that long ago that we were comparing the gameplay for Gotham Knights to Avengers. And I remember just thinking it was night and day at the time. But it's kind of wild that in a universe, like Gotham Knights was supposed to be out like now-ish. Mm-hmm, it was supposed to come out at the end of this year. Obviously, it was delayed for obvious reasons. But now we're getting these two big superhero games in 2022, which is really cool. So yeah, I'm optimistic. I want to see more gameplay, definitely. I want to know how the loot system properly works and how much ratio of story to grind we're going to have, but cautiously optimistic on it.
I definitely have a thing, you mentioned the loot system, I definitely have a big old qualm with Warner Brothers overall. Like, I just, there's something about the way that all the DC stuff is coming together, and it is across the board. The thing is, like, there is synergy between the way that they rebooted the Suicide Squad movie. They let James Gunn just go hog wild, do whatever you want. And then there's a lot of parallels to the new Suicide Squad game trailer, the Killer Justice League stuff, in terms of like King Shark. I mean, King Shark for me is like a nexus of like Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy and then the new King Shark. And in this case, he's voiced by Samoa Joe, like the, I forgot the guy's real name is, but he's a wrestler. And they've got, I think she's called Deborah Wilson, who's the last from Jedi Fallen Order. She played Sierra Junda. She's like the new Amanda Waller. So there's some like known names and sort of like heavyweights kind of thing in there. But like I said, that in terms of like brand synergy, it's like, okay, this is almost the game of the James Gunn movie, because we're doing King Shark, we're doing these sort of parallels, and we're doing the wacky shenanigans and the pop song in the background. Like, that stuff makes me itch, to be honest, at this stage. But you're way more positive on it than me, I think, in terms of the sense of humor and stuff like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when we first saw the Suicide Squad, it was such a brief trailer, and I thought I needed to be convinced. It did nothing for me. I was like, the film, the James Gunn film, I wasn't a huge fan of it. I thought it was good. I thought it was a step from the previous movie. But I meant when we first saw the Suicide Squad game, like, you know, when we got the teaser trailer for that, when it was first announced, and I thought, looks all right. This one I was much more positive on, because even though it is hitting a lot of the familiar beats, like you said, you've got the Hives tick tick boom on in the background soundtracking it all. You've got this like irreverent humor, and it did more for me because it felt like, didn't feel just corporate, at least it's in my eyes. I like the gimmick of these characters. I thought the humor was good, especially the final scene with the Penguin, which I know you're not a huge fan of.
No.
But I think the core concept of them going out for the Justice League is just tantalizing, man. Like, if it was just a regular Suicide Squad game, I might not be that excited about it. But I think having these characters hunting down these heroes that we know so well, like, that's cool. That's a great angle.
Yeah, there's something about it that's really like sort of meme-inspired. I don't know how long this has been in development. I know it is Rocksteady, and assumedly it will be after 2015. So obviously the Suicide Squad came out, the original Suicide Squad movie was 2016, and one of the go-to things with that was like, oh my God, if the whole motivation behind Amanda Waller forming the Suicide Squad was the idea that, you know, Superman could just go rogue and rip into the Pentagon, and oh my God, we need this team of superheroes to fight back. And so on the critical side, the reception side to that movie, it was like, what, some person with a baseball bat and someone else who throws boomerangs is going to have a chance against this superhero? But now that's entirely this game's angle. And I'm like, is that literally born out of the response to the way that Suicide Squad was received in 2016? Or was this always the plan? Because as far as I know, and I know very little, I don't think the Suicide Squad have ever fought the Justice League in a comic. Maybe that's a really big popular arc, but I don't, I know bits and pieces about DC Comics, and I've never seen that be floated very much. But is that a thing?
I mean, I'm not denying it. I'm not going to pretend to be a Suicide Squad fountain of knowledge. But obviously, you know, there have been Justice League members, maybe even the Justice League entirely, who have gone rogue, and superheroes and supervillains have had to band together and take them down and stuff. But when it comes to this plot specifically, the only reason I don't think it would be in response to the 2016 movie is because the Suicide Squad as a game has been in flux so much. Like, it was originally in development at WB Montreal. Like, they made a pitch for a Suicide Squad game that was cancelled. Now they're doing Gotham Knights. Then Rocksteady pitched something else that got canned. Now they're doing Suicide Squad game. So I just don't trust the internal development of WB as a publisher to execute an idea based before the 2016 movie. Like, I just don't think they had that force. Like,
I feel like it's just funny how it's lined up. Like, that was one of the main sort of like complaints at the time. And now this literally is, can Harley Quinn take down Superman? And like, that's a cool question to answer.
Yeah, for me it works because it's like this group of, you know, wrong-uns, this group of just
they're people, misfits.
They're misfits. They're kind of useless in a lot of ways. You know, like there's. They're the underdogs, essentially. Like, you look at these supervillains going up against even Superman on his own would be a huge, huge deal. But the fact that it's the entire Justice League with their entire set of powers, like, in your mind, there's no way they can win. But it's going to be so good, at least in my opinion, if they execute it right, to watch them just kind of like bumble into these victories against these literal gods. You know, to me, that's a fun concept.
Do you think, like, two things? Do you think, one, that they'll let anyone die? Like, will you actually be able to kill Superman, the Flash, etc., Green Lantern, etc.? And two, do you think gameplay wise that the final killing sequences will largely be scripted, even in a gameplay sense, like you will kill him or you will affect them this way, or will they give you a bunch of options and let you figure it out, almost Shadow of Mordor / War style of like, okay, their weaknesses are like 3-4 things. If you can line this up, you can get this kill shot off.
I think at least some of them will die, and I think it will be, well, I don't know, I assume it will be more scripted. I feel like Rocksteady in the past have, even though they've had like sandboxes, they've had open worlds, when it comes to their main narratives, they've been very scripted. It would be cool if you had like this kind of, you know, these different opportunities to kill the Justice League members in different ways. But I feel like with this and Gotham Knights, both of those universes are like distinct. You know, over the trailers, we saw like two different versions of the Penguin, for instance. You know, we've got all of these different characters existing simultaneously in different games, in different universes. So I don't see why WB would have a problem if Rocksteady was like, look, we want to kill Green Lantern, we want to kill the Flash for our universe and carry on through there, because it's not going to affect what they want to do with that character if they want to do anything with them in another game.
Well, that's what makes you wonder, like, have they abandoned their shared universe thing? Because for the longest time, especially, it seemed like the Arkham games were the main timeline, because in Arkham Knight, they reference, you know, Superman, I think Green Lantern's gets referenced in there, and Flash does. And, like, now you're getting that, where it's a shot, it is the, assumedly it's the continuation of the Arkhamverse, because I think that's what they initially said. I don't know how much that's gone waxed and waned and stuff. But, like, if they then kill the main characters, or whatever they do with these characters, does that then affect, you know, the potential of a Superman game or a Flash game? Because it's not, they're still, to bring the wider universe stuff, you know, the wider brand stuff, they are doing a Flash movie again for the first time or whatever with Ezra Miller. So it's like, well, you could then do a Flash game and tie it all together. Or whether, I don't know whether DC have just abandoned the shared universe stuff because Marvel do it so much better than they do.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, if I keep saying that, I've said it this entire podcast and I want to stop. It's such a crutch I lean on. Sorry about that.
Well, what do you mean?
When it comes to DC in particular, you know, in their movie universe, they obviously still have the shared DC main canon, if you want to call it, of like Aquaman, Wonder Woman, you know, Ben Affleck's Batman, The Flash, all of those. But they have found such success in branching off from that by doing either offshoots kind of set in that world or something else entirely, like Joker. And I feel like, I've said it again, good Lord, that they've got to the stage where they understand that they can chase Marvel, but they can also do their own stuff and have all of these discrete universes. And why doesn't that have to apply to the games? When it comes to DC and their idea of the shared universe, living with other discrete universes and spin-offs, audiences understand that more in a gaming world where we're not even expecting things to be connected at this point. We understand that things are going to be separate.
Yeah, this, it seems like what they're doing is one giant experiment on like how much can an average audience keep up with, or do they even care? Like, is the shared universe more associated with Marvel? And in this case, you know, because they had a trailer for the Flash movie where Michael Keaton voices it, and Michael Keaton's Batman is in it, but you just see him from behind. The Batmobile's in it, but you don't get to see it. It's underneath like a sheet. But it's just like, you know, simultaneously going forward, we've got Robin Pattinson's Batman, Michael Keaton's Batman. Don't know what's happening with Ben Affleck's Batman, because he's not, there's like, I guess, I don't know what the hell they're doing with him at all. And then there'll be a potentially another Batman in the Kill the Suicide Squad game. But I don't know if he's dead in that as well, because it's kind of a continuation of the Arkham series. But overall, does the average person just go, it's just Batman, and they know the basics and they go forward from there? Because I remember the mission statement for the Batman animated series. I forget the name of the creator of the initial animated series, but their mission statement that they gave to all the staff and the artists and everything was that everybody knows who Batman is. Let's just write stories from, you know, the midpoint onwards, the Spider-Man 2 entry onwards. Like, don't worry about doing all that stuff again. And so I wonder if that's what they've just, this whole multi-year process has just been an exercise in, do we actually need to bother with another origin story or another backfill thing? We can just do a Batman story.
Yeah, it took movie studios, superhero studios specifically, so long to catch up with that. You know, when we had the Amazing Spider-Man reboot, it was like, we don't need the origin again. People, Spider-Man, Batman, anyone in their realm are like some of the most well-known characters in fiction.
Yes.
Kids grow up knowing exactly who they are, what their powers are. Now general audiences and those kids' parents know exactly the ins and outs of it. We're at this point as a culture that we don't need it. We can just have all of these different Batman and living simultaneously in different games and different movies and stuff, and people aren't going to be confused. You know, we're not that dumb. I think studios finally understand that we're not that dumb.
One thing, speaking of mainstream audiences though, the thing that I really worry about, because just to bring it back to the Suicide Squad stuff for a second, I am 100% burnt out on the Suicide Squad. Like, I checked out the 2016 movie, I watched the James Gunn one. The Gunn one was fine, but it wasn't anything incredible. I thought it opened better than it continued. They killed the weasel, and I was there for the weasel. I wanted to... What?
Well, I mean, they did, but no spoilers. Did they, though?
But he's not in the movie much, is he? I was there for him and King Shark, and the bit when they put King Shark in the back of the car while they go and do the whole middle third of the movie, I was like, what? You marketed this on a weasel and a shark, and that's exactly why I bought a ticket, and they're not here. Point being, though, that overall, I'm burnt the hell out on the Suicide Squad. I'm burnt the hell out on James Gunn-style Guardians of the Galaxy humor, and the sort of irreverent, oh, they're a wacky bunch of the shenanigans ensue, and I'm just like, part of me, like I said, it makes me itch. And so I wonder how they're going to do that. And also, to bring in something else, Suicide Squad absolutely bombed at the box office, like in terms of the rebooted one that was entirely James Gunn focused. So going down that route, I mean, the trailer's been received pretty well for the game version, but I just wonder, is Suicide Squad as big of a deal to the average person as DC / Warner Brothers need it to be?
I probably think it's not, but at the same time, you've got the double header in here of not just having the Suicide Squad, you got the Justice League as well. So
another movie that didn't do that well.
Ian Boomerang. True, but it didn't do well because of, I would argue, the production problems and the response to the previous movies. I don't think that invalidates the appeal of the Justice League as characters, you know, as Superman and the Flash and Green Lantern, all of that jazz. And I think they're obviously huge draws in and of themselves, so we'll complement the fact that it's a Suicide Squad game, because it's not just a Suicide Squad game, if that makes sense.
Yeah. This would be a whole separate podcast, but part of me genuinely thinks that the average person doesn't care about them. Like, I think that people care about Superman and Batman, and Wonder Woman's a brilliant first film, but I don't think the average person gives a hoot about the Green Lantern or anyone like that. I think those heroes are fundamentally ancient, and they've not had anything good associated with them in decades. So that's my like core feeling. But I might be the only person who feels that, but I just feel like the response to something like the Suicide Squad, obviously that's a different thing entirely, but it still was that thing of like, DC's heroes are fundamentally not as appealing as Marvel's. I feel like that's like a thing that they just have to keep contending with.
I don't know if I agree, only because, Scott Telford, Aquaman made over $1 billion, and that's Aquaman. You know what I mean? In Wonder Woman, the first one, when that wasn't in a pandemic, you know, releasing in a pandemic, also made a lot of money. These characters do make a lot of money. It's just that the thing that spawned them isn't, at least in the movies, isn't the most well-received and didn't make the most money. But outside of them, I think there is the appeal for them individually, 100%. I would say.
I think
the money alone.
They are really good examples. I think that, obviously, the pandemic stuff is going to skew box office numbers. But there was something that came out straight after Suicide Squad that grossed as much as it would have done beforehand. I forget what that was now.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, there have been some big movies that have still done very, very well. So I think it is still valid that The Suicide Squad doesn't seem to mean that much to a mainstream audience. But 100%. Making it playable, and if they keep nailing the trailers, I mean, just the base idea of, like, there's a bit towards the end of the trailer where it looks like Superman is grappling with like another, like, regular person. He goes to eye laser them as he's holding them. And I'm like, you're Superman. What has happened to you where you are being grappled on the floor? Like, I like the idea of knowing what they've done to sort of bring Superman down to Earth so they can actually have a fight with him and let you fight him in the game and stuff as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a lot of DC fandom stuff. Very quick thoughts on the Batman movie trailer before we continue. Mr. Pattinson.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Scotty T, I'm a big fan of the Batman movie trailer. I loved the first one. I thought the second one looked really good. And I keep thinking about that final shot where the camera's upside down and the Batman's walking through the flames and the music kicks in and you get the little score. Huge fan. I'm not even that big on Matt Reeves necessarily. I think he's quite
The Apes trilogy is the best trilogy, my friend.
Well, I need to go back to it. I need to watch it. I knew him more from like Let Me In and Cloverfield and stuff than I did more modern, well-received stuff. But yes, hyped about it, really excited for it. And I think that's going to hopefully break the kind of malaise that I have with a lot of DC stuff where I've enjoyed a lot of it, but haven't loved a lot of it in such a long time.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I'm looking forward to the most is that isn't what was even in the trailer very much, because they show a little bit of Riddler, barely any at all, like Paul Dano's Riddler. You get to see him making little latte symbols on top of his coffee before he gets arrested, which is something that he might do. But I like the idea of it being a sort of 3-hour like detective story more than I care about doing a sort of Nolan channeling gritty Batman. I feel like part of me, it's literally because time is a flat circle, and I've spent the last sort of 20 months thinking of the past, but part of me just goes like, well, we did this for a whole bunch of Nolan stuff, and it spurred all these different movies. And it's not like I'm just looking for something to be like different or identifiable. And I think that can be an almost Prisoners style Batman movie, where you take someone like Matt Reeves, because I mean he can shoot stuff gorgeously. I think, like I said, the Apes trilogy is brilliant, especially 2 and 3. But that's the thing that I came away from that trailer going like, that looks impressive, that looks confident, but I actually know very little about the story. I know very little about the stakes. I just know the Batman's in it, I know the Riddler's in it, and I like the new Batmobile.
It's funny, Scott. Again, yes. I'm kind of on the other side of the fence to you on this.
Wound up, you might be. Carry on.
I am very wound up. I also came away from that trailer thinking, I know very little about the stakes. I know very little bit about the story, but I also thought, that's good.
Oh, no, I love that. Yeah.
I like that I'm going into this movie, you know, barely even understanding what it is outside of knowing that it's Batman versus the Penguin versus the Riddler, maybe versus someone else. And that's cool. I like that building these trailers more around vibes and atmosphere than they are, you know, here's the plot, here's what it's about, here's everything involved. And and that's a quite an interesting way to take it.
And also, like, I mean, it seems like they are building it around the thing that we said. It's like a shared understanding of a basic level of an origin to a character. So let's just crack on. Here's Batwoman, here's Catwoman. Here's Batman, here's Catwoman. Excuse me, and here's Penguin and everything else. And we can just do a Batman story. It's not like anyone watched the animated series and went, well, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to need an origin story. Like, it was always just fine. So getting movie versions of that is hopefully for the best. But yes, a lot of DC fandom stuff. I do think the Batman looks pretty solid as well. I just hope it's got... I look forward to seeing what the actual story is. I like the idea of a really good Riddler story where he's always one step ahead. And if he gets arrested at the beginning and it's literally just him sort of pulling the strings from inside whilst he's incarcerated, I think that's a cool way to do a Batman story. Overall though, to bring it back to video games for a little bit, we've both been playing Far Cry 6. Now, you played it way more recently than I did, or at least in terms of getting into it. You started it across the weekend. Where do you come down on, because this game is very divisive. It was very, oh my God, it's just more Far Cry. I really enjoy it. I think it's the most streamlined version of Far Cry that we've got so far. And I love the visuals. I think it looks absolutely gorgeous. And so I've been loving it, but it is very much just more Far Cry.
It's a strange one to comment on. I want to just fully clarify, this is extremely early days for me. I've only played it for a couple of hours. It's very much of early first impressions because I was hungover yesterday and I was playing PGA 2 or 2K21. And I thought, I need something else. I need something more than this. So I went into town and picked up Far Cry 6 and played a few hours of that. But yeah, I'm still in the tutorial area. And ultimately, I think the presentation is cool. I really like the opening cinematics where you have to kind of escape the city and join up with the guerrilla fighters and that. I thought the setup was really interesting. I think mechanically, it's so solid. Like, the shooting has never felt better. Yes. Feels punchy, especially with the DualSense on the PlayStation 5. You're completely right. It looks gorgeous. And that was something I was a bit worried about pre-release because I thought the facial animation looked a little bit ropey.
And John Carlos doesn't look good.
Yeah, it does in the game still, but the vistas and the textures and all of that come together. I just kind of am sick. And I mentioned this to you before we started recording that all Ubisoft games have the same structure in the same UI now. Oh, yeah. And I'm sick of having to spend time on the tutorial islands. I know this, for a lot of people, this will be their first Far Cry game and maybe their first Ubisoft game. But me and you have played so many Ubisoft open world games, and I don't need to be confined to this tutorial island to figure out the mechanics that I've used for six full games now.
Well,
before I get let off the leash, and that's been a little bit frustrating.
No, well, we are literally coming up on a decade of Far Cry. Like, Far Cry 3 was 2012, so we're about to hit a decade of these mechanics, these introductions, these exact same things that are very much ingrained. If you carry across the stuff that we said about just going with it from the that we mentioned about Batman and everything, just let us have an option that literally a menu option. Can I just go with it? I'll hit the button and put me on the big island. I don't need this little tutorial island to the side.
Well, I mean, it's not even necessarily Far Cry's fault, and I wouldn't obviously mark it down for this. It's just kind of where it's released in the industry in general. But coming off Deathloop, which has more or less the same opening where it's like, you can get behind someone, click R3 to do a stealth takedown with a machete. I was doing that exact same thing in Far Cry 6, and I just thought, I want to do something else. I don't want to just be stealth killing with machete at this moment in time. But that's obviously a very big nitpick on my part. It's not
the thing
saying
is,
the game is bad or anything.
No, but they do try and go like, oh, maybe you should do stealth. Oh, here's this entire wing of the game where it's stealth. You can do drop down kills. You can do machete kills. You can get silences. You don't need to do any of that. I mean, like, I'm just shooting everything. Like, I send Guapo the crocodile in to go take care of someone on the other side of the map, and then I run in. I just do the super special thing. I send off all the rockets. That takes care of any mounted guns, any tanks, any helicopters, and then I just mop everybody else up with my machine gun. Even in the story missions where it's like they literally tell you, oh, you're saving this guy, you can't raise the alarm. I was like, yeah whatever, blap, and I just shot the guy to the side of me. And then it doesn't even fail you. It just says, like, well, you're gonna have to lose them for a bit until they forget that you're there, and then we can go and rescue him again. So it's just, they don't care. And, like, I don't care either. I'm skipping cutscenes, mate, at this point. I don't care.
Oh my God.
I know.
That is outrageous.
For the first sort of 6-7 hours, then I was like, I'm not going to get anything from this. Like, I don't care. Like, it's all just going to be variations on, we are the guerrillas, we're going up against the president, what do you call the dude that's in charge? Mr. Castillo.
Yes.
And going up against Mr. Castillo, and it's just going to be blow everything up. So I was like, well, I'm going to hold circle, I'm going to skip it, and I'm going to blow stuff up.
Well, I do enjoy blowing stuff up. Blowing stuff up is very satisfying. But also, what didn't help the familiarity is that as soon as I jumped in, you get a mission to destroy a bunch of tobacco fields with a flamethrower. And
with a song in the background.
With a song in the background, I thought, I've done this in every single Far Cry game I've ever played. And they try to lampshade it in the game, like the main character says, oh, this felt really familiar. Yeah. And that kind of made me more annoyed. Yeah. So I was like, you know, this is just a repetitive thing. You knew this before. Why are we going through it? It's not funny to lampshade.
That's
it.
Like when any game sort of acknowledges their fetch quest. Like, oh, I've got to go and get these three things. Yeah, you do. And you're making me do it. Like, really.
It's like, you haven't been forced to put this in. No. This is your decision. Make it better. But it was a good version of the burning the fields whilst a song plays in the background mission that I played a lot. And it does sound like I'm very negative on this, but hopefully when it opens up a bit more, I will be able to enjoy the mechanics because I'm really enjoying that side of it. And like I said, the story has got its hooks in me. But at the moment in time, judging the intro of this to the intro of Far Cry 5, I think I actually prefer Far Cry 5 a little bit. But that's an opinion in progress that I'm putting out to you and the listeners.
I mean, for me, they'll have nigh on the same intro. The thing that I really liked about Far Cry 6 was that the cutscenes were shot in third person, so you actually got more of a sense of self. Like, you got more of a sense of this cast of characters that you're interacting with. And I like that. I really like the beginning. I really like Far Cry 6, but it's weird because it's almost tragic how much I don't care about anything other than just base gameplay. But also, I would say that's what Ubisoft are like right now. Like, you can give me story hooks. You can give me these characters that are well-written and they're well-voiced. But the actual meat of what's there, I'm not getting some amazing nuanced point on what it means to form a rebellion faction in fake Cuba. I'm literally just blowing stuff up.
And it's like, you know, when it first loads up and you sort of see the menus and you see the loot system, like it's a fine loot system. I've been quite enjoying getting the new bits of outfits and all of that stuff. And it's a fine UI. It's totally functional. I have an issue, though, that it's the exact same as Assassin's Creed's Valhalla.
It's one of those mouse cursor UIs.
The little mouse cursor, the loot kind of like board looks the same as it did in Odyssey or whatever. And it's kind of like, why don't these games have their own identities anymore? I love Far Cry. And I like Assassin's Creed, but why do they have to play the same? Like, I thought we had gotten beyond this and got to a point where the different Ubisoft games were allowed to have their own identity again, but now it literally is. And, you know, we joked about this for years and years, but now it genuinely feels like if you played one Ubisoft game, open world game, you've played them all, because not only do they play very similar, but now they literally share, you know, UI systems in the same kind of visual shorthands. And it's like, what's it? Oh, it just, it winds me up.
We said this back when Far Cry 4 came out, because it was exactly the same as Far Cry 3. Obviously, they added a few things with the Himalayas and stuff. You got like different environments and a few more abilities in terms of chain kills and stuff and vehicle hijacking and stuff. But I remember the conversation at the time being like, oh, this is the last time they can do this. This is the last time they can just give us the same thing. And obviously, we then got Far Cry Primal, Far Cry 5, Far Cry New Dawn, and now Far Cry 6. And so I do like what they change. They sort of just refine parts of it. Like, I like that they give you more abilities at the start. I like that you can sort of, you know, the loot system, I think, works a bit better, like in terms of you just get better stuff faster. You get better weapons faster. They almost know what they are, but which is why I'm skipping cutscenes, because I'm at this stage, because I'm just hours in. And every cutscene for the last 7 hours has been some variation on, we need to go take down that dude. We need to go get you to go recruit someone who's been taken hostage, whatever it is. And I'm going to pick up whatever the story is in the opening one line of text after the cutscene that is my mission goal anyway. So like I said, it's kind of weirdly tragic that it's being played like that. But at the same time, I feel like the only positive in this is to treat it as fast food. Like, it is literally as discordant as fast food, or as momentarily satisfying as fast food. And so that works. But it's also quite a damning indictment on where Ubisoft are at, because even after all the allegations, and obviously there was all those various POSs who all got fired or left, who were, according to behind the scenes reports, the ones responsible for making everything the same. But now going forward, Far Cry is the most similar thing possible. I know it's been in development that crosses over with those people and that got fired and everything. But going forward, they just announced Ghost Recon Frontline, which is literally PUBG with Fortnite's building mechanic. And it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, you know, 93% operating income loss after Ghost Recon Breakpoint, and this is your savior moment? Like, no.
Yeah, it is not the shift that I was hoping or wanting from that company creatively. Like, at all, and it just makes me kind of feel like I don't know. I was optimistic initially that they might change things for the better, and like in terms of the games they were greenlighting, in terms of the mechanics they were putting in there. And at least right now, you know, between this again, which I still quite like, it might change my tune on, but this, the Ghost Recon thing, the X Defiant thing, it's the that Elite Squad thing, was it called, with Sam Fisher in? And I'm just looking at these different games that are coming out of Ubisoft, and I'm thinking, would I even like these when I was getting into games as a kid? Like, is it because I'm a jaded old man now with players so much that I don't appreciate them for what they are? But I don't think that's true necessarily.
No, I mean, look at like I said, look at the sales for Ghost Recon Breakpoint. That game was an absolute bomb, and they had, like I said, they had a 93% operating income loss largely because of that game and because of when it launched and everything. And it's just the formulaic approach, the corporate approach to creativity is the thing that at the core makes me sick. Like, I hate it across the board, which is one of my issues with the whole Guardians of the Galaxy energy of Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, because I just want original stuff. And I know we talk about this all the time. It is such a worn out talking point, but I feel like it's more valid than ever when you get stuff like that, when the biggest teams with the biggest amounts of resources only give you more of the same. It's like, you guys should be available. You should be allowed to do other stuff. But yeah, overall though, I guess Far Cry 6 is solid enough. What are you going to say?
One more gripe about the lack of creativity. I was looking at the, it's not the season pass, I don't think, or maybe it is, but it's like the promise of DLC for Far Cry 6. Mm-hmm. And it's this quite cool looking thing where you play as the villains from previous Far Cry games. But it's also, I think, the Blood Dragon DLC from Far Cry 3 that's been remade or remastered. And taken together, I was like, those are quite cool. But it's, again, it's just looking back. It's like, you can play as these old characters. You can play this old DLC remastered. And I'm just thinking, everything is nostalgic. Everything's about the past. And I kind of just hit breaking point at that point and had to play more PGA 2 at 2K21.
The forward-looking energy. There's PGA 2 at 2K21. But I mean, that's my overall thing. And once I started like realizing that, of how much stuff is nostalgic, how much stuff is backwards looking, like sort of shoulder gazing or whatever the hell we want to call it, it does start to make me go, I need new stuff. If we're coming out of this collectively, like every single person listening to this has been through what we've all collectively been through, and if the solution to that is look back and look at when things were good, no, that's not going to work. It needs to be forward thinking. It's a wider whole philosophical conversation, but that whole stuff, like I said, makes me itch, gets me annoyed, makes me go, what have we got in the future? Because I don't want another PUBG, Fortnite, Battle Royale. Like, what? It's not 2018 anymore, Mr. Soft. So it's been a time. But yes, for now, though, hopefully you've been suitably wound up by the various stories, various things that we can cover. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Been lovely as always.
Lovely as always. We'll catch you all next week. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.